Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Monday morning. It's 9:12, and it's the Roundtable panel. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Our Roundtable panel today is a good one here on a Monday before Christmas. We have Albany Law Professor and Director of the Immigration Law Clinic, Sarah Rogerson. Good morning.
Happy Monday.
And also with you, we have WAMC's Alan Shartok. Good morning.
And good morning to you, Raymond
Thank
Graff.
You. Nice to have you here. Siena College Professor of Comparative Politics, Vera Acarius-Kelly, is here. Good morning.
Cheerio.
Are you in a festive mood?
I am.
Well, the winner of the Most Wonderful Person of the Week is also here. Political consultant and lobbyist Libby Post is here. Yeah, I say that because, you know, our Joe Donahue has been ailing.
Yes.
And I text Joe back and forth, and late last week he was very excited early in the day. He said, Libby's bringing dinner tonight. How did that go?
It was great.
Yeah?
We really had a nice visit with him and Kelly, and he was flat on his back.
What'd you bring?
Sit up a little bit. We brought sandwiches from Sati's over in Latham.
Oh, nice.
Very nice.
Really great place.
And they'd never, we go there all the time. They'd never had any of their food, and it was just really, really sweet, and he was very happy to see us and cookies.
He didn't want to let you leave, I bet.
Well, actually, it was, we only stayed an hour because, first of all, it's an hour schlep from here to there. And it was the night of the snow squalls, but I understand. He's been through a major trauma to his body. He has to heal. So we got there around 6:30. By 7:30, he was ready to go take a nappy, which was fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand totally. When I had my surgery last year, I was ready to take a nap in like 15 minutes. So, but he's doing well. And if for those of us who follow him on Facebook, he went to the doctor the other day, and he stood up.
Yeah.
For the first time.
That's so
since
looking great.
The accident, and he's going to start PT. It's a long road home, but he'll get there.
Well, that's great, and I'm glad you did that. And
thank you.
The next time I take a sick day, I expect you to come over and bring.
You have to do something major.
Oh, really?
Like that.
So the next heart attack? Then,
yeah, the next heart attack,
fine.
No problem. I'll bring chicken soup with lots of balls.
There you go. Well, it is the Roundtable panel. Of course, it's Monday. We're still waiting for investigative journalist Rosemary Romeo, but she's clearly on assignment somewhere, and she'll be back with us momentarily, right?
Indeed.
So we'll just start the show without her?
Better yet.
The White House is projecting confidence that it will prevail in a constitutional spat with Democrats over the nature of the Senate's impeachment trial. And House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has delayed sending the articles of impeachment to the Senate until Republicans provide details on witnesses and testimony in hopes of shaping the upcoming trial. Democratic and Republican leaders in the chamber remain at an impasse over the question of whether witnesses will be called. The chief of staff to Mike Pence, vice president, that would be Mark Short, who is the chief of staff, said Sunday he believes Pelosi will eventually give in.
You looking at me?
Well, you're ostensibly the political observer.
Well, I think that Pelosi has played this brilliantly.
Mm-hmm.
Look, let's face it. If she sent this stuff up there, there would be a 20-minute trial,
and that would
a banging of the gavel, and it would be all over. So she's saying, you don't get it until you guarantee us that we're going to have a more than a pro forma trial. And I think she's right. I think the American people understand it also. You know, this is a guy, Trump, who says up is down, down is up, in
right
is out,
is left,
you know,
that right is wrong, wrong is right.
Right. And so they just try to make the
Libby,
best deal.
Libby, we got the point.
Yeah.
Well, I've been finishing Alan's sentences for how long?
Decades.
Ever since you were in my class.
Right. So it's okay.
Wow. Okay, well, I'm
it's
new
fine.
To this Monday panel,
yes.
So I didn't quite know what was going on.
Hang on. Let's stop the show. I'm going to give the email address here while Rosemary, who is now here, sets in.
Nice to see you.
The email address is panel@wamc.org. If you would like to share your thoughts with us, keep them brief, if you could, on topic, panel@wamc.org. Please proofread them at least once. No attachments. How you doing, Rosemary?
A little flustered.
What's the matter?
Nothing. Just getting
this is
out
the
of
microphone.
The house, over, you know.
You're, but you're here now.
Yeah, I'm here.
Do you have a driver now? Because you're kind of a big star. Kind
yeah,
of a big girl.
Yeah, right.
Yeah? Maybe you
just
could start.
Just a butler. You
maybe
know.
You could start just a few seconds earlier.
I'm going to try. I'm always here on bad weather days. I've learned to do that.
But, right.
You know, on nice day, it's like, oh, I'll just zip right down.
You got all confused that it was nice weather today?
No.
Well, if you missed it, the White House is predicting Pelosi will yield on the impeachment delay.
I heard.
Then we have this New York Times article today. Democrats citing White House emails renew calls for impeachment witnesses. Top Democrats, and I'm quoting here, from Cheryl Gay Stahlberg. Top Democrats on Sunday renewed their demands for witnesses to testify at President Trump's impeachment trial, citing newly released emails showing that the White House asked officials to keep quiet over the suspension of military aid to Ukraine just 90 minutes after Mr. Trump leaned on that country's president to investigate former Vice President Joe Biden Jr.
It's extraordinary. I mean, it is so simple. He did it. He doesn't want to admit it. He has his people giving all kinds of, well, frankly, insane and insulting rationale for why, he isn't guilty of what he clearly is guilty of, and most of us have to just sort of sit there and take it.
Well, and I hate to say it, but legal scholars aren't being super helpful in this moment. Not all of them. I signed a letter of over 600 law professors. Noting that what the president did was impeachable. And in part of that article yesterday, I believe, discussing whether Pelosi will yield, the president now claims that he wasn't impeached at all.
Right.
Crazy. What would you call it?
And that's based on a claim by a Harvard law professor who posits, opines, just thrown it out there.
That unless
the articles of impeachment have formally been delivered to the Senate, arguably, maybe an impeachment hasn't finally occurred yet.
Oh, Libby's raising her hand.
Okay, so the articles of impeachment were never really delivered to the Senate in the Clinton case because he was just censured by the Senate. That was the deal that was cut, but he was still impeached. Andrew Jackson never left office. He also. So these two were seen as impeached. Trump has been impeached.
But Andrew Jackson had a trial in the Senate, though, right?
Yes.
And he won by one vote. Didn't he
win
one vote?
He bought, Jackson he and bought Clinton apparently both had trials.
One vote.
He bought one vote.
That's the historians have discussed the interesting one vote issue.
Well, I'm disgusted with law professors. I used to think it would be all clear that they would just settle.
Wait, we have a law professor here.
I know. I'm directing this comment.
There's lots of law professors. I just assume you're not talking about
me. The guy who started all this was Noah Feldman, who was the same. Well, he was one of the three who said, yes, this is an impeachable effect. And the only law professors that the Republicans are listening to are Turley, who was the one at the impeachment hearing, and Alan Dershowitz.
Yeah, which is just amazing what has happened to this man.
Who, Dershowitz?
Yes.
He was in my house.
I mean, he
just
has
like
become
Graham,
disgusting.
Right?
Yes.
What?
Did
we
you
know.
Do an exorcism?
What?
I always thought the law, like, follow the law. It's just like when people say to journalists, tell the truth. It's like, oh, yeah, obvious. And follow the law. Well, there's no idea. The law is all interpretation and who gets to vote on what interpretation counts. We are so... Look,
I don't know
that.
Much. Yeah, thank you. Doomed? Were you gonna,
No, I was not going to say
you
that.
You know, obviously, I haven't followed this guy for the years through the years, but Shirley is well respected, though, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of falls into the same category of all the articles that you read about Barr being well respected and, you know, reliable and thoughtful and well studied and all of these articles. Do you remember reading them?
Yep. Speaking of well-respected, I mean, there's a former U.S. attorney for the state of Connecticut who was put in charge of looking into the whether the FBI, double-checking to see if the FBI investigation regarding the Russia scandal was managed correctly. Now, he's saying that, and somebody who's well-respected, who never puts public statements on the record, is now saying, I have some reservations about the FBI's conclusion that that this was a up-to-snuff investigation.
And it's funny, that statement by, is it Durham or Dunham?
Durham.
That statement was made right as the IG report came out. Mm-hmm. And it took both Democrats and I think Republicans by surprise that he would actually make that statement.
Everyone. Apparently
so why did they pick him, do you think?
Yeah, I can't
he said he
why.
Said with his tongue in his cheek.
Right.
No, well, I mean, he has a long history of not talking at all. And he has been in charge of busting three of the major crime mob syndicates in the country, the Genovese,
So you think the Trump White House picked him just because he would be a good, clear, fair
fellow. It just seems so. It seems so unclear in this case too. I find this whole thing really muddled. Why he suddenly, for the very first time, would speak publicly on an issue, except for that apparently he had a disagreement with, was it Horowitz who wrote the report?
The IG.
The IG who wrote the report, and there was a footnote issue they debated and disagreed on, right? Where Durham was basically quoted as having agreed to the statement made by the IG's report.
Yeah,
right,
so
Sarah?
Maybe he's a very quirky guy. There was an article that made a big deal about how he wakes up at 4 o'clock in the morning, gets dressed in the dark, often wears mismatched suits.
Oh, my God, that's like Alan.
Pretty much. Pretty much. Well, 4 is a little late for me, by the way.
What else?
But I worry about how much of this is the Trump administration doing what Trump has always done, which is find these people who have existed in the dark, who maybe have a very closed social network, who are aspiring to great things and are waiting for their opportunity to have, you know, their 15 impact. Minutes of fame or impact or whatever it is that motivates them, and he's able to find that and exploit it for what he needs.
He hires lawyers who finds that, and all of these intellectuals are now positing all these very interesting academic arguments, and to them, it's what they do. That's what scholars do. Mm-hmm. But Trump has learned to pounce on all of them, and so confusion and dissent, and now he's got people believing that windmills kill bald eagles. It's crazy. And actually, by doing what they do, we scholars and intellectuals, by arguing academically and theoretically, are helping him.
Well, we play right into it because he is the anti-intellectual. He is the premier anti-intellectual. And, you know, I love the uneducated during the 2016 campaign. Mm-hmm. Right. You have the Republican legislators now in states coming out and saying we don't need to fund higher education because higher education is just a breeding ground for liberalism and, oh, my God, people thinking. So, you know, he does know how to find the weak point and exploit it. And he gets other people to do this for him, which is...
Wait, I just want to make sure that I'm hearing this correctly, particularly from Sarah, who is, I have tremendous respect for.
Here we go.
and that is, are there people in this room who actually think that Donald Trump appointed this fellow from Connecticut because he was going to be a fair and objective person or because the fix was in?
No. Yeah. I think he had the right mix. If Trump wanted to find somebody who he could target, who would be believable, who better than somebody who's busted all these crime families to absolve him of his mobster game?
You know who else did that? Rudy Giuliani.
Yep.
Rudy Giuliani busted a lot of crime families. And let me tell you right now that he is in the thick of this in a way that is just disgusting.
But to be clear, this judge has had a very well-respected past, right? And up until the moment that he said something that would be against the narrative, he has been well-respected. And this goes along with Mueller as well, right? Mueller was supposedly a fair and even-minded person until the results were not necessarily to the liking of some in the media.
Same with Comey.
Come on. That's really painted.
Oh, come on. Look at his history.
He's still respected, and his opinion did not clear Trump.
Let her finish, please.
Democrats are disappointed. I hate when he does that to me. I hate when he does it to me. So
you're
you can interrupt me anytime.
To stop interrupting. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
We are arguing, and we can do it ourselves. But Mueller's reputation was always the same. The mistake that liberals made was always, isn't this wonderful? He's keeping quiet, no leaks. How much integrity is that? And the truth was that he allowed spinning by the Republicans. He was replayed by the Republicans. That has nothing to do with his ability or the integrity of his report.
My point was about Durham being well-respected for years.
Until he's now tainted. Now
he made this statement, which I guess is not against the rules, but it's certainly against sort of modern decorum. But then you had the FISA courts also doing something that was almost unheard of. And issuing, did you see what the FISA court said about the IG report?
They said those 17 errors that are pointed out in the IG report were just inexplicable and had to be fixed. They want a report which the FBI is already working on and how they will fix it.
This from the court.
Yeah.
Although, Ray, I don't know if I'm allowed to speak.
This from the court.
This from the court. Who obviously is in it up to their elbows? Sorry about that, Libby. Up to their necks in it because they were complicit in everything that went on. Huh. So the FISA court was right there, And I hate the FISA court because I think individual civil rights.
Yeah, people with.
But here's the thing: the FISA courts have been bipartisan, subject to bipartisan criticism, and the IG was right to look at it and to make recommendations. But Trump has been a genius, and his administration, at saying the problems with the FISA court are problems against me. It was part of the witch hunt against me. That's the part that's untrue, and it's like all the other arguments we've been talking about. They're like little fine points. Trump does not deal in fine points, and neither does the electorate in this country.
But here's another fine point about Durham, I think, which is really the key underlying issue why I think Trump and his people are picking on him, because, I mean, selected him for this process. Because, as Sarah said, he has a long-standing history of, in Massachusetts, in Boston in particular, eradicating crime families and identifying the linkages between the FBI agents there and crime families, especially Whitey Bulger. So he has credibility with going after corrupt FBI agents.
Right.
And that is exactly the linkage. That's what Trump needs, and that's why he picked Durham, because he does believe that guy has a long history of not trusting the FBI and knowing that there's slime within.
That's exactly
and that
right.
is exactly where he's going with
that's
this
interesting.
Appointment.
Yep. That makes sense.
Letters?
Breaking news.
Right, yeah.
Breaking news. All right, we only have about a minute here before we go to BBC, but it looks like the CEO of Boeing has resigned in the wake of the 737 MAX.
The New York Times is saying that they fired him.
How could he survive?
And all I can say is au revoir, because none of us ever want to fly one of those Boeing MAX planes ever again, I believe.
Meantime, the European manufacturers are making a fortune.
Everybody's buying them.
I sort of resented that the media did the same thing as Boeing when that story came out about the report on how culpable the company was. It was like, oh yeah, it's shutting down, that's going to really hurt the economy. I'm sorry, there were thousands of lives that were just thrown away. They said, fine, 2,000 people died, we can live with that.
Now,
I wonder
if he was also fired in the wake of the Boeing Star
Right, I was just about to say, because that didn't go too well.
It made it up, but it just didn't hit the orbit necessary
Can you remind everybody what it was? I saw the picture, but
it was a craft that was supposed to link up with the space station to deliver supplies.
And it's like sort of the next gen, which will be taking astronauts and supplies to the space station, and it was a big deal. And it made it up, and it made it back, but it didn't make it because of allegedly a software glitch to the highest orbit necessary. Yeah. All right, we'll take a break here, and then we'll get to the letters, and you can write us if you wish. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Keep them brief if you can. Alan, we'll get to the letters momentarily. Sarah Rogerson is here. We have Vera Acarius-Kelly, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, the person of the week, Libby Post is here as well, and we will be back with more Roundtable coming up.
Just hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring, ting, tingling too. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Outside this snow.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's 9:34. It's a Monday morning. Ella Fitzgerald there, Sleigh Ride, just a classic. You know, that's one of Sarah LaDuke's favorite Christmas songs. It's one of mine too. You know, you guys know Sarah LaDuke has an amazing singing voice, right? Mm-hmm.
She does.
Yes, she does.
Oh,
she does.
God. She does. She's very talented in so many ways.
And this is one of her favorites, and also one of mine. So that's nice. We're going to hear some Christmas bumper music today on the program.
And she runs the show, so that if anybody has any,
let's get her singing next time she writes letters. Right. Drag her in.
She needs to sing with the letters.
She's also a great Twitter follower.
Sing the letters.
Agreed. And you know the best part about Sarah LaDuke, she doesn't get upset. She has not once punched Alan in the face, even though at
have
time,
you?
No, not yet.
You think that's funny?
But she's very laid back, and we're all difficult to deal with at times, and she's a great producer and with a great singing voice.
You're twice as difficult as I am.
Really?
And you know why?
Because you signed the checks.
Because you're twice as big.
The email address here is panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. We have some letters there, Alan.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
No, Thank you.
No, thank you.
Donna says, Johnson, not Jackson.
Sorry.
Andrew Johnson was impeached. Andrew Jackson was not.
Oh, it was Libby. I don't want any notes to Rosemary about what I said wrong.
I am sorry. I got it wrong.
Reggie Jackson?
I think we all knew.
Reggie Jackson, right. It was Andrew Johnson.
Yes,
right.
And his most famous
Andrew Jackson
statement.
Came after Lincoln and undid all the good things that Lincoln did.
And one of the things that I do remember from somewhere was that he was drunk and he was talking to a crowd and he said, I'm going to Baltimore and you may go to hell. So,
the most interesting thing I learned about the Johnson impeachment was that after it was all over, the Supreme Court handled the law that he supposedly broke that was the reason for his
firing the war secretary?
That he could not fire any cabinet member without
all right,
congressional
approval. What'd they say?
They found it unconstitutional. Therefore, his impeachment on breaking a law that was unconstitutional was itself unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. I never knew that.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know
but
that either.
They can fire cabinet members now.
Of course, because when the Congress tried to make it contingent on their approval, the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that.
Okay.
Separation of powers.
Okay. Interesting.
Well said, Rosemary. Okay, so that was that letter. Shall I proceed to another one?
Oh, please do.
Absolutely.
Well, all right. Billy says, Pelosi, while Pelosi is right that the Senate should call a full Corps of witnesses, I disagree that Pelosi has played this well. She had the chance to call witnesses like John Bolton, but did not want to go to the federal courts to compel their participation. She has already yielded. And the answer to that is
they'd be stuck in courts for 6 months, and it would be by the time the courts rolled, it would be null.
Till the Trump third term.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's why.
But also, you know, it's interesting now because Pelosi is in a position to actually try through Schumer to negotiate some kind of witness calling now in the Senate trial, right? So we'll see if now all of a sudden the Republicans are saying, well, we don't want witnesses. We want this quickly done.
Well, what are the
done,
chances
right?
that they'll do that? In other words, what do you think the chances are that Donald Trump is going to let these guys who could sink him show up in the Senate?
Well, that's the whole thing. You know, if these witnesses can exonerate you, which is what he keeps saying, then let them testify.
That's not how he has ever worked. He delays and delays, whether it hurts him or helps
that.
Him. And he fully expects, and he may be right, that he'll be reelected. He doesn't have to deal with us, you know, the hoi polloi. He doesn't have to care about us.
But in the meantime, Christianity Today and other evangelical publications.
What other ones?
There's one other. I heard of two over the weekend. But Christianity Today is the one that most people are talking about.
And their subscriptions have increased over the weekend, too.
Yeah, calling for him to resign, of course. And so I think Nancy Pelosi is brilliant in terms of using the only other things that can help in terms of swaying the opinion of the Senate or moving the Senate at all or changing the outcome that we know is coming at all is external pressure. And where do you find that? You have to build it. She's making a pressure cooker of circumstances. Good. And it's up to the American people. I mean, this is a great time to march. This is a great time for Christians to raise their voices and people who formerly supported him. There was an article about a woman in Pennsylvania who's 22 who voted for him in 18, says she's considering probably not voting for him for re-election.
I mean in 16. She voted for him.
16, sorry, yeah.
So, Billy, thank you for that letter. Good morning, panel. Nancy will not cave despite White House wish. However, McConnell and 45's minions can't be trusted. Even if they agree to all of the demands for a legitimate trial, they lie all the time. Can't Dems hold off until the presidential election? He can still be removed from office for the last few months in the White House. And that's from Christine.
Well, I don't think he'll be removed. I think that's not going to happen. But I think it's possible that this sort of negotiation process between McConnell and Pelosi will go on for a while. You know, I don't think it'll last for months. I think they'll come up with some arrangement, and then they'll have to announce the arrangement, and it would be really unbecoming if the arrangement was publicly announced, which the Democrats will likely expect, and then to go back on it. Although, it's been done before in this current administration,
right.
But I think it'd be unbecoming for them as senators if they have any self-respect left.
But they don't.
I hope it goes on as long as possible.
Me too.
It's bugging the hell out of him, and it is tarnishing him. I mean, if you go by technicalities, Nixon definitely was not impeached, and yet, what does everybody think of the world? Oh, he was impeached.
Right,
all the goods
true.
To that.
But I mean,
this is reputational.
So you actually think it's going to take months and months and months?
I hope she drags it out as long as possible.
Well, she might, but it
because
might not
I
take
know
that
long. McConnell is sitting down with law professors of the Turley Dershowitz stripe, trying to figure out some way around it. Maybe this will go to the Supreme Court, and who knows what would happen then. But I hope she drags it out to the last second. I never have understood why this impeachment proceeding is seen as bad for Democrats running for office.
Well,
you're running against
you
got to
wait till the polls start showing, right?
Well, that's a very good point, Ray.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but that's a very good
that's
point.
Nice.
A lot
Thank you.
I'm not going to listen to polls until after Iowa. I think they're all irrelevant until
no,
the
but
Iowa.
No, but a lot of this will be the kind of pressure that is being put on politicians by the external force known as the public.
Right.
And if it looks like to Pelosi like this is not going well, she may cave.
Sarah Rogerson, this might not be in your wheelhouse exactly, but is there any chance the question of whether it is okay to hold those articles and not send them to the Senate goes to the Supreme Court?
That's a really interesting question that I definitely don't have the answer to. But I would imagine that's the sort of ambiguity in the Constitution that might require. I don't know what the path would be in terms of the litigation path or where one might file or who the plaintiffs are. So, you know, without getting lost in the procedural details, it's definitely a question. An epic question for the Supreme Court.
Here's the problem that I see. It's not specifically written down, this particular scenario, right? So what could the Supreme Court even do? I mean, they would have to legislate in order to come up with an answer, right?
Well, they would punt, probably, which is what the Supreme Court always does.
But to where?
Yeah, well, right. So you know? they might say,
back to a little court.
In terms of this particular impeachment, you know, we're not going to...
Too many of us have been appointed by him, so
we can't weigh in. We can't weigh in, but in the future, Congress might consider clarifying this issue for the sake of our nation, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, in any case, Lori wrote to us on the subject of Dershowitz, so I want to read that.
Oh, the guy who stayed at your house once?
He did stay there.
Oh, yeah.
No, he didn't stay there. He came there.
Oh, yeah.
He sat in a wing chair.
Did you talk about cars or something?
Yeah, okay. So Lori says on Dershowitz, let's not forget that Dershowitz attended the Epstein parties.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
They're all covering for each other. Bill Clinton could go a long way to restoring his legacy if he would just tell all. I have no idea what that means, but there you
go. I don't know either, because if
about
you
Epstein?
Tell all about Epstein and he was there, you might actually... become entangled.
Dershowitz has been accused of being, like Prince Andrew, one of the men that he supplied
That's right.
young
and he
girls
denied
for.
It.
But
I mean,
so is Clinton, so it's hard
so
to see
I'm
how
not,
Clinton
yeah.
would clear himself.
No,
by talking
I think
about
they're
it.
All like one larger cabal, it seems.
Yeah.
Okay, and Laura wrote to us, again on Andrew Johnson, said, excuse me, panel, if you're going to pontificate about anti-intellectualism, please be at least correct with information you disseminate on your own soapbox.
Once again, that was Libby, not Rosemary, who was the one who pontificated. And a slip of the tongue between Jackson and Johnson is not an error.
I am so
Come on.
Sorry.
All right,
Come
everybody,
on.
The president who was impeached was not Andrew Jackson, capital letters.
Yes.
It was Andrew Johnson, capital letters.
Right.
There is a very big difference in their political stories.
Yes.
Laura
yes.
from
cool
Orange
teacher.
County.
All right. Well, that was fun. Let's take a break. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. If you want to weigh in on this whole Jackson-Johnson debate, we'll be back.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Yuletide carols being sung by a choir and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows.
Oh, that's nice. Aretha Franklin. Sarah LaDuke really nailing it today on the bumper music. The Christmas song from Aretha Franklin. It's the roundtable panel, 9:46 is the time, going on 9:47. It's a peppy panel today. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, Vera Acarius-Kelly, Libby Post, Sarah Rogerson, and you at panel@wamc.org.
Okay, and we heard from Linda say, sorry, Rosemary, about your statement. Good morning, panel. You are severely mistaken when you say Trump is brilliant. He is severely demented, but his handler, Barr, has been managing things, although unethically, but smartly. The criminals in the Republican Senate are supporting Trump because they know he will drag all that are part of these crimes down to him. Thank you, in capital letters, Linda.
Okay.
I like that. All right. Roger says, Boeing CEO out. Good. Dear panel, those of us from Seattle or the Seattle area have a certain loyalty to one of our most famous companies. But that loyalty is sorely tested when they hired a CEO from Illinois who promptly moved the corporate headquarters to Chicago on some flimsy pretext of being better centered in the country. Bah humbug.
Oh, boy.
The new boss back then didn't want to live out west, and Illinois offered a big tax dodge. Maybe now the bosses will move back to Seattle where they belong. And that's Roger in Gilderland.
Well, my main issue is, you know, if you have a CEO of one of the most important airline industries or aircraft building industries in the world, and you try to push the FAA into approving safety regulations for you to benefit your corporation, and you disregard human life, that is profoundly disturbing and shows that this guy didn't deserve to lead an industry like that.
But that's so much of corporate America right now. All the deregulation around the environment, all of the poo-pooing of climate change, you know, all the kids in cages, all the concentration camps that now the United States of America is supporting with our tax dollars.
But here's the difference with this particular situation, because people simply, as customers, refuse to go on that plane. Do you remember that? The reason why there was pressure was public resistance to it. All of us, I think. I mean, I remember my husband and I. So we had tickets and we checked if that was a particular airline, right?
So when you get tickets, does it say you'll be on a MAX 737?
Yes, it does.
Really?
Yeah. Absolutely.
You should
check.
More,
I haven't flown since biplanes were...
That's why hundreds and hundreds of customers called in and said, I'm not going on that flight. And airlines adjusted and changed. And that public pressure made a difference in this case. And people are highly sensitive in this particular Boeing situation. And perhaps people should do this more often and pay close attention to other deregulated industries.
My boss and I have a big fight going on about the 737 controversy because this Boeing president who just got booted is personal friends with Trump. And they talk together. They socialize. And so then you find out that the FDA kind of relaxed rules, worked
FAA.
With them. Sorry, FAA. Thank you for correcting me.
That's right.
That would have been seven letters.
That would have been eight letters.
It was Samuel L. Jackson, too, just in case she's going at home.
But the FAA, a federal agency, is then talking with and working with the president's friend. Whistleblowers within the company went to the Seattle Times and exposed how they bypassed their own. I think that is a really awful example of corporate cronyism. Yep. And my boss, who was an engineer before, an aerospace engineer before he went into journalism, said, no, these are complicated systems. And the worst thing was that they blamed the crews of the Indonesian and Ethiopian flights like they were too stupid somehow.
They weren't
well-trained
to
deal with this. Yeah,
when in fact we found out.
So racist. And it's just a really despicable controversy.
And Rosemary, you remember, I mean, this is what you also referred to. There were pilots in the United States
who couldn't do it.
Reported and said, this is not a safe plane to fly. You need to have specialized training under these particular circumstances.
Well, people within the company said, we're not doing this right.
We exactly have to. Right. And so this is the outcome, right?
Is Boeing the number one corporation in America?
Not
yes,
anymore.
It was.
No, was it? Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is a big hit.
Right. It is. It is
and
indeed.
It's, you know, brought on by themselves, however.
Yeah, well, so, I feel bad for all the people within Boeing that are actually very reliable, thoughtful, good engineers and workers and employees. They're all going to suffer the consequences because of the hubris on the top.
Well, Boeing's going to be okay.
Yep.
Boeing's going to be all right. I wouldn't worry too much.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, they're going to be
yep.
all right.
Well, we'll see.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. They're
because they're too big to fail.
They have massive government contracts.
They're lifting off space, whether yeah. they hit orbit or not. They're lifting spacecraft space. Off. Yeah. I mean, we got Space Force now.
Right.
We're going to need Boeing,
and,
right?
And honestly, people yeah. will forget. People mm-hmm. will forget about this. Some other thing will happen. Our attention will be put someplace else. They'll think, oh, this is great. This guy's gone, so it'll be fixed. And they'll go back
well,
on the plane.
Air travel is still the safest form of, yeah. of transport. Yeah. Available.
Well, it is interesting as to whether or not people forget things. I mean, I'll give you an example. The Berkshire Museum in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. sold the Rockwell treasures
yeah.
that Norman himself had given them so that the people would have. Mm-hmm. Well, the fury was unbelievable. And now mm-hmm. we're coming up on years. And they got a new guy. They got the other guy left. Mm-hmm. And people still won't forgive him.
It's only
so
been
sometimes,
a year or two, though, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But sometimes, you know, it just doesn't happen. What is something funny over there? What?
What happened?
It's probably not suitable for air.
No, it is actually. There's an image of a Hanukkah, a menorah mm-hmm. made of bananas.
With duct tape on them.
Oh.
The
artist. Oh, that is
yeah.
funny.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so
I'm glad you're following along, Libby.
I always follow along.
We are women.
It's
we can multitask.
Right, that's right. Multitask is my middle name.
So Anne says, Durham, I was concerned about your opinions, Reed Durham. You immediately assumed his comments revealed him as a Trump partisan. At least that's what your conversation intimated. Did it occur to anyone that Durham might be into further misconduct by the FBI? What?
The IG said they had no evidence, said Barr and Durham, neither of them had evidence to support their claim that it was a politically biased investigation. Yeah. So the answer to that is no.
And by the way, I'm sticking with my original concept, which is why in the world would this president pick this guy? To yes. do the investigation. Oh, because he thought his integrity as a mob buster was so strong? I don't know. We already have information about the FISA court errors. We read that Durham disagreed with a footnote in the IG's report, which said he agreed with certain points. Does that shake your confidence in the report, in Horowitz, in the FBI? Why immediately assume that everyone who leans towards a Republican interpretation of the facts is nefarious or compromised? This is a trick of the intellect, which is harming our national discourse. Our open minds totally out of fashion. And this is from a very blue person.
Do not shake your head. Yes, there's an answer to this.
Who wants Trump gone now? But I want to hear all the facts, and that's from Anne.
Yeah, that's missing all the facts. Horowitz wrote the report.
He did not exonerate the FBI in any way.
He did not, and he said that himself. But he did say that Barr and Durham both maintained to him that, yes, it was definitely political bias. He said, give me all your evidence. And then he reported to Congress that there was no reliable evidence that this was politically biased. That's why we're saying, yes, it is definitely a Republican interpretation.
Okay. And Casey said, Senate trial. In an alternative universe, Mitch agrees to Chuck's demand for key witnesses and documents. Nancy, that's what I call her, Nancy, then releases the articles to Mitch, and a bogus trial date is set. Why wouldn't the Don once again claim executive privilege, complete immunity, and order the same noncompliance by the White House, since Mitch had agreed to the witnesses, and this is an actual trial? Would he then be forced to hold them in contempt? And that's Casey and Kanan.
Well, and that might go to the Supreme Court, too.
Yeah.
Right? Because then there's a lot of open questions about what's the extent of executive privilege in these types of situations.
Well, I think it's quite simple. I don't think that Trump has any intention of letting those witnesses up there.
No. Mm.
No, he doesn't. And nor does McConnell, I guess.
Yeah. Well,
so, I mean, he, you know, they're working out a specialized arrangement, and that's why we think there might be a delay of some sort. We don't know how long of a delay, but it's very difficult to come to a conclusion if you have polar opposite views on how to run this trial.
Now, Vera, what would happen? I mean, we have to then examine what it is that will get everybody off the dime here. And I still say it's public opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
In other words, if the public gets really ticked off about what's going on here, then either McConnell will have to give way, which because remember, his whole thing in life is not only protecting the president, but protecting his majority in the Senate.
Right.
That's what this is all about.
So the question is, though, what changes public opinion in this country? I really wonder if journalists begin to uncover information that advances the case that Trump was justly, you know, impeached, perhaps through the... I don't know what other information that could be gained. I don't know. That hasn't shifted public opinion. What has shifted public opinion? Certainly not that Republicans are, you know, resisting calling witnesses. What has changed?
Well,
people are beginning to tune out. They're so convinced that their position is, you know, just reaffirmed. So what role will public opinion, what will have to happen for public opinion to change?
There has to be an understanding on the part of the public, which I think there may be, that this isn't fair. In other words, this what's happening here, it just isn't fair. We have a system. The system is being thwarted.
Right.
Trump is getting away with murder. And if that point of view prevails, then McConnell has to give way.
So let me play Republican for a day here.
Right.
So the same argument has been made by Republicans about the House investigation and the impeachment proceedings, right?
That it wasn't fair.
So they said it wasn't fair. It was held in some basement where people are excluded. We don't have had access to all the witnesses. So now, again, we have Republicans claiming that first step of the impeachment process was unfair, and now Democrats are arguing, oh, we have to control how the Senate is going to run the hearing, the trials.
Okay.
So here we go. How's this changing public opinion? I'm not sure.
When will we find out? We'll find out after
know.
We break for news. The email address is panel@wamc.org. If you would like to write us, panel@wamc.org. Sarah Rogerson, Vera Carius-Kelly, Libby Post, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, and you, another hour ahead after news.
Snow is snowing, the wind is blowing, but I can weather the storm. What do I care how much it may storm? I've got my love to keep me warm.
Oh, that's nice. That's Billie Holiday. I've got my love to keep me warm here on the round table. It's the round table panel. We're off tomorrow and Wednesday for the holiday, although I'm sure our CEO is against the idea. We're going to take a couple of days off.
Why are we off?
Why don't you call in and do a panel?
Why are we off tomorrow?
Because of it's the holiday. I forgot eggnog. I just wrote it down. I forgot to go get eggnog tomorrow. And
Tuesday's not a holiday.
Yeah, it is.
It's Christmas Eve. That's a holiday?
That's a holiday.
That's when we flock to church with the candles and the silent night.
At night.
And the what have you.
At night,
but not
right.
At 10 o'clock,
I mean,
9 o'clock in the morning.
It's 9 o'clock in the morning.
You have to shop.
I'm going to the 4 o'clock service.
Pardon me, Mr. Scrooge. May we have the day off, please?
You may not.
The email address is...
Well, I have to say this is news to me.
Really?
Yes.
Well, maybe I shouldn't have brought it up. We should have just, you know...
I was planning on coming tomorrow.
Well, feel free. In fact, the guys will set you up. You can do your own pretend show. It's the roundtable panel. Libby Post, Sarah Rogerson, Vera Carius-Kelly, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org. Before we get back to the letters.
Yes.
I had this sort of an informal poll before the Thanksgiving break with other panelists. Who here at the table, and we'll go around the room, will talk politics during the holiday get-together? Rosemary.
Oh, there's nothing else to talk
about. With your family?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I'm the quietest one in the family.
Oh, cut it out. So it's not a holiday without a good argument about politics.
I went to a friend's for Thanksgiving, and his family is of the, we'll talk about art, literature, and family events. I was like so frustrated.
And did you?
But not bored.
Were you able to use your internal filter?
And you have to, you know, yeah. You just would stand out as a jerk, but I wanted to. So I went home and then, you know, yelled at some sisters and sons.
Well, that's good. Good for the happy holidays. Yes. And how about you, Libby Post?
Oh, we talk politics.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But you know, most of the time we agree on everything. And so we all just, you know, are like trying to one-up each other about how bad this man is. You know.
Well, that'll be fun. It's a parlor game, isn't it?
Yeah, we have a lovely time. I mean, you know, we have a blended family, and some of us are Jewish and some of us are Christian and some of us are straight and some of us are gay and all that sort of stuff, and it's really lovely. And
good.
I wouldn't have it any other way, actually.
All right, and how about you, Vera?
Well, there are subsections of families I will speak with.
All right. Oh, I see.
You know, politics is a dangerous topic sometimes.
I mean,
you
isn't it nice to get away from that sometimes and just, you know, flip on the old game? Vera puts her feet up and watches the old football game.
No, I don't watch football. Remember, soccer is my sport.
Football
is the brain-damaging sport, remember?
Oh, yeah. Excuse
very
me.
Very European.
Excuse me.
So it's soccer.
Yes. Soccer can be brain-damaging as well. You hit the ball with your head one too many times. One of my friend's fathers...
See, Libby's proving that you can fight about sports,
just
too.
Just about it.
Apparently
you don't have to fight about just sports.
And anyway, people will fight about when is Tom Brady going to retire is really the biggest
question. Well, I understand that, and I never have anything to say about football, American football. I just don't like the sport, so it's... Just not my kind of thing.
Did you see Saturday Night Live this week?
I did. It
was the best Saturday Night Live, really, I think I've ever seen. And that was one episode where there's a whole bunch of families talking on the holidays and topics and sports, you know.
Yeah, we can fight about anything in my family. I don't think it doesn't matter what it is.
And nothing's off limits. You go ahead.
No. Well, I grew up in the Midwest. I go home to Michigan. Most of my family is still in Michigan. So it's a little different kind of fighting. There's a lot more passive aggressive behavior.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's more like creative pot shots. But if somebody comes at me, I've lived on the East Coast now for 20 years with a brief, you know, interlude in Texas and Maryland. But I've lived here almost 2 decades. So I bring the New Yorker when I come home.
So tell us about it, because Michigan is interesting.
Fascinating.
Tell us whether you see any movement to or from Trump.
Well, we'll see. There's a lot at stake for some of the two fresh. Well, not both of them. One of the freshmen Congress women who flipped a district from red to blue, and her name's escaping me, but I'll look it up.
Tlaib?
No, just north of Tlaib's district.
Okay.
Right, because she was in a more purple. Well, really a red district, and she flipped it to blue, and then she voted for impeachment. And her town halls have been raucous with people really coming out of the woodwork, calling her, saying that Tlaib controls her, that she's is not an independent thinker. I'll be in the 5th congressional district in Michigan. I always note where I am when I'm home. And it's going to be interesting to see. Justin Amash left the party. He's from Michigan. Michigan is a state to watch.
Michigan, I think,
and has often been the bellwether for Democrats in the United States, mostly be around labor issues. And now that's blown up after the auto industry collapse. I had a lot of family members deeply and directly impacted by that and the financial collapse that happened.
Do you watch the polling from Michigan?
Polling? No. No, I just listen. You don't need polls in Michigan.
Yeah.
All you need to do is travel the state.
Wow. Interesting.
In my house?
What do you do? I'm sure you guys talk politics.
Well, as you know, I'm married to a brilliant woman who knows more than I do, and number one. And number two, my daughter is a professor of political science, and she also knows much more than I do. But the real crucial people are the 5-year-old and the two-and-a-half-year-old.
Right.
Five and a half and two and a half. And they will brook no interference from me. So they make it clear what their presidential politics are. And on several occasions, they have said things about Trump, like, you know, things like that.
Can we get them on the panel?
Mouths of babes.
Right. They're prescient. Very, very prescient.
Let's get the kids on here.
You want more of these?
Well, we could do that.
What about your house?
Oh, well, we never talk politics ever. No, it'll be you know, at the holidays. My kids aren't, you know, my older kids are interested, but they, you know, they have their ideas. And
what are their ideas?
You know, I think most kids at that age are well left of center.
Yeah.
And they're doing their thing. They're learning, and they're, mm-hmm. You know.
They're disagreeing with their dad.
I don't talk politics.
Yeah, well,
why. I think Vera makes a very good point. We sort of know.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So are you ready to go?
Yeah.
Letters? Okay. Brian says, poor Robert Mueller. Every time our friends across the aisle denigrate the Mueller report, why don't the Democrats hold up a poster showing all the president's men? 3 convictions, 7 guilty pleas, 11 Igor, and likely other referrals. Mueller has become our danger field. He gets no respect.
Hey. Mm-hmm.
And that's from Brian in New Paltz. Mm-hmm. And then we heard from Tom in Queensbury, where everybody's still playing by the rules. Impeachment, says Tom. It would be good if clarification of proceedings with impeachment trial could be made now, because very likely the scenario will be repeated in the near future with a Democratic president and a Republican House. P.S. Alan was, capital W-A-S, was right.
About what?
As he called that there would be impeachment about 2 years ago. Tom from Queensbury.
You remember that?
No. Yes, I did. Okay, Scott says, what happens if by a literal miracle Republican senators convict Trump, what happens? Does Trump leave the next day on Marine One? Does he have recourse? Is there an interim period before Pence, and it says parenthesis, gag, is sworn in? And that is from Scott in Claremont.
I haven't allowed myself to even think that far ahead, because I think it's detrimental to my mental health and well-being to lie to myself.
Ain't gonna
to
happen.
That extent.
There is no appeal from impeachment. I do know that.
That's true.
And the logistics of their leaving would probably be worked out as part of the negotiations.
Could be. And that's from Scott. And then we also heard from Sean, said Barr. Roundtable, based on your conversation earlier, did Attorney General Barr, quote, a widely respected prosecutor, end quote, not sacrifice a lot in taking this job and playing this role in the Trump administration? Why would he do that? Your thoughts? Anybody else besides me?
I know what you're going to say.
What do you think I'm going to say?
That he's got a whole lot of money waiting for him on the other side of public service.
No.
This is his philosophical goal.
He wanted to be the Attorney General again. You know, it's very prestigious.
Yeah.
Your name goes down in the book.
Oh, that's fine. Both things. Ego and greed.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're both plausible explanations.
And I think he's also ideologically committed. He's a very conservative Christian.
Yeah.
You know, those kinds of values, they do overlap.
You
got to
read all about him.
He's waiting for the end times.
Yeah.
He's a dominionist. He's waiting.
Yeah.
My Roselle has been reading extensively on the Barr matter. And her father,
His
father was the head of the prestigious Dalton School.
Right.
Where all my Fire Island friends. Oh, did I say that?
Always say that, Alan.
Went to school is one of the most prestigious in New York. Mm-hmm. And he got sort of pushed out. And, you know, I think that made it an indelible impression. Anyway, Sarah said, comment. Throughout the impeachment hearings, our Republican representatives have bemoaned the fact that regular government business is on hold because of the time and money being spent on the hearings. Meanwhile, it is my impression that our president is spending a great portion of his tenure in office attending Make America Great Again rallies and campaign events. Another example of double think and double talk, I would say. Mm-hmm.
Agree. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's at Mar-a-Lago now, entertaining war criminals.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's truly disturbing. The man does not do actual work for the country most of the time.
He's never done work for the country.
He may never have done any work, but
everything is about him
benefits him.
But
I'm just saying, in terms of his public speaking engagements, it's all about his reelection from day one.
But
it's about his level, his appeal, his reputation. Alan?
I think he's depending on the fact that what worked for him before will work for him again. It's that simple. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Michigan, yes. He was at a Michigan rally when he dropped that statement about
Dingell.
About Dingell.
Yeah.
Was that awful?
And it was a silence.
I was nice to the widow.
Oh, my God.
And she asked me, and I lowered the flags, and now she owes me.
Yeah, but now John is burning in hell because she voted for impeachment. That was the
kicker, and even Michigander MAGAs were like, that's too far.
Wait, what did you say?
Michigander MAGAs.
Michigander MAGAs?
MAGAs.
It's all Michigan.
Michigander
MAGAs. Well, you and I understand that, Michigas, yeah.
It's like New Yorkers. Michiganders.
Yeah. I got it.
I mean, that was really bad, wasn't it? I mean, it's disturbing.
And we did hear from Karen, said, "Good morning, panel. You can't expect public opinion to be swayed with current news coverage that continues to label the impeachment of Trump as a partisan political process and decision just because the Republicans voted for impeachment articles." The evidence reality was provided by Democrats and witnesses called in the House. The Republicans had no answer for those arguments. Anybody get that? I mean, let me read that again. You can't expect public opinion to be swayed with current news coverage that continues to label the impeachment of Trump as a partisan political process and decision. Just because no Republicans voted for impeachment articles. Okay, right. Got it. Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, by definition, if all one party votes one way and all one party, another party votes another, that is partisan.
Yep.
So she's right. But the media tries to stick with the old rules, and that is not the way to cover this guy or this administration.
And John says the 400 bills.
On McConnell's desk?
Yes. Uh-huh. Moscow Mitch has 400 House-passed bills on his desk. What's the best way to present this information to the nation? Who is the Democratic backbencher in the Senate.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there was just an article locally about Cuomo and the bills that he's killed. I think it's in the same.
And then you got the guy in Kentucky who just the outgoing pardoned guy who everybody. just pardoned 500 people.
One of whom was who raped
Child
a 9-year-old, and the reason why he said that her hymen was still intact.
Oh. I mean,
they're just the misogyny that is becoming to characterize all of our political discourse is just astounding.
And
it's really, you know, the hatred. It's really just hate.
Please tell me that these pardons are under review.
No.
No.
Pardons cannot be reviewed in the state of Kentucky.
But please tell me why he's doing it. Now that he got thrown out.
Right.
Yeah,
so is it just sheer revenge, do you think, Alan?
Yes,
could be.
Revenge on who, though? On
the new
state
guy.
That voted
you,
the wrong
no,
way?
No, no, no. It's on the new guy.
Why
let all
guy?
Of these people out. Remember Willie Horton? That's
yeah,
exactly
but that's because that's because
about.
Dukakis used, you know,
yeah, but you
had
let,
the policy. This the new guy didn't have anything to do with.
I know, but you let these people out who are hardened criminals. They will commit crimes again, and it'll be on the new guy's watch.
No, but I also
the Democrats is going to say this is the fault of the Republican.
This,
before
it doesn't
hard
matter.
To see how he
it doesn't
how
matter.
He hurts them.
It doesn't
this,
matter.
This it sounds really bizarre to me. This whole event of the pardons in Kentucky. I mean, it really is bizarre. How would you? Why would you let out a convicted murderer? I mean, it's like,
because
why?
Of what I just said. Because of what I just said.
No,
it doesn't matter.
That doesn't make
no,
sense.
No, it does make sense. Look, when there is something wrong in a government department, and it has roots in the prior administration, nobody looks back that far. They just say, it is this administration's fault that this happened. The same thing will happen here. If any of these people commit crime, they will blame the present administration for it.
But the present administration has a perfect answer saying, look to what this guy did. That's so direct.
Look, these people are voting for Donald Trump. Logic is not part of the equation anymore.
I don't buy that argument, Libby, at all. I think it has something to do with possibly some kind of outreach to religious communities on forgiveness. That is the reading that I, you know.
I
that,
think
that,
it's sheer revenge is this probably
well,
the same thing.
Well,
maybe
you'll
both be right.
Yeah. It might be, you know, stab into your eye, you know, shame yeah. you. And then also the sort of outreach for, you know, a future Republican coming back and relying on some sort of Christian forgiveness kind of appeal. That's what I think.
So when do you think Trump is going to pardon his entire campaign?
Well, just to wait. That's going to happen.
Right. And let's not forget that Christians aren't the only ones with a corner on forgiveness. I mean, I really have a hard time when people keep equating one with the other.
It's that eye for an eye thing.
Yeah,
gets you guys a bad name.
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is that eye for an eye thing is also part of the books that you guys pay attention to. You go back to Leviticus 18:22 all the time when you want to.
Everybody goes back to Leviticus.
Right. When you want to get the gays, you know. But the eye for an eye thing, that's not us. Sorry. So give me a break.
Well, let's just move on then.
Okay. Wow.
So we can't talk about sports, religion, or politics.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's talk about the pie.
All of it.
Are we still on that question?
Well, one at a time now. Let's have some decorum here. Alan.
Okay. Thank you for that, Ray.
Right.
I appreciate it so much.
Bang the gavel.
And Art says, hi, panel. And this is about the cost of deregulation. Hi, panel. The stock market is soaring as regulations disappear.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So far, so good.
Of course.
Why is so little made of the long-term cost? Immediate gratification is Trump's Trump card.
Well, you are seeing some consequences.
Thanks.
Boeing's guy just got out. Part of that was lack of regulation. And you saw it with Wells Fargo as well. You need a whole lot more of them, but there are consequences.
And all the banks, as a matter of fact, when the whole thing went down.
Well, also correlate, this is just a fundamental public misunderstanding of the way that economics work. The correlation is not causation. Just because the stock market is up and deregulation is happening doesn't mean one caused the other. And also the impact of deregulation is always delayed. The unintended consequences or intended consequences that are just negative always hit the next administration.
But that's also intellectual. I mean, there's
It's not intellectual. It's just like facts of economic cycles.
You have to be able to think.
Yes.
Analytically to get there.
You go to your 401k and you look at it. You say, whoa, isn't this nice?
So can I make
another
comment?
You don't start thinking about unintended consequences or anything else. You say, whoa, that's good.
Well, we do all socially responsible investing, and even that went up like 14 or 17%.
I don't think there's any question that deregulation, along with gigantic, unprecedented corporate tax cuts, have helped in the stock market.
So that's fair.
There's just...
As everybody always points out, the stock market is not the American economy.
That's right. It hasn't risen wages. It hasn't improved conditions of labor.
People are working three jobs.
Here's the comment that I want to make exactly on that issue. There are fewer than 50% of Americans who actually have a 401k or have investments in the stock market, and they're not seeing any of these benefits.
Right.
What we have is people working, as you said, Libby,
multiple jobs.
They're barely making it. They cannot afford the high rents in urban environments. There is now a report that came out today that certain large cities are economically suffering and expecting unemployment rates to rise.
But Vera, do the people who don't have the 50% who are not in understand that they're not in? Do you understand the question?
They understand hearing all the time how the stock market is up, but for them that is meaningless. They don't have retirement savings. They don't have investments in the stock market. They're barely making it, and the salaries and wages are not going up.
The measurements that we use to say whether our economy are good or bad have not changed over the past four or five administrations. So if you're going to blame Bush, if you're going to praise Obama, you have to praise Trump. The economy is booming in his administration. There's just no way around that.
Well, we have should have a conversation about is the kinds of jobs that are being created and the kinds of wages that people make. And indeed, you know, bringing up the minimum wage to a higher, you know, level like $15 did make a difference for a lot of people. But how long can that be kept up? We need to more broadly look at what what we consider well-being in this modern economy.
I agree, but Trump did not promise I'm going to bring you a whole different kind of meaning of well-being. He said more jobs, but we're saying it's fake reporting
on the economy. The stock market does not state how well we do within the economy. It tells us, people that have the privilege of having a 401k, that we have, that we're in a better position.
Well, and I wouldn't give those jobs to Trump. I mean, he, all the job making initiatives that he put forward failed. Yeah. You know, the plants he said were going to open didn't. The plants he said were going to boom closed. I think, you know, I would credit that, I hate to do this, to the invisible hand of the free market for creating those jobs, not Trump.
You don't like the free market?
No, it's the invisible hand. There's a lot to unpack around how my economic theory was formed. You can see how Republicans
or Trump supporters would say, oh, you liberals, you know, you're happy when there's Democrats in there and the economy is good, but let it be good under Trump and you're just blaming him, you just hate him. I'm sorry, I hear all that you agree. I think this is Bernie Sanders' appeal, but Trump supporters are right. The way we measure economy has not changed. And we are doing well under him.
And you know what? That is exactly the argument that has been made by people that are looking at the stock market, at their personal checkbooks. They're saying, Trump is good for me. That's why I like him. But that is the one single issue that if it changes next year, that in fact will shift those voters, because they care only about their checkbook and not about moral values, human rights, deregulation, environmental issues. They don't care. They care about their financial well-being. Their pocketbook. Exactly.
We talk about a lot of theys in here. I think I'm just saying that we need to be a little bit more careful about how we talk about these massive swaths of humanity. But I get it. I got to tell you,
I love this panel. this is one of my favorite groupings of people on this panel. This has been very good.
Couldn't agree more.
And you know, you're doing okay too, Alan.
And you know why it is exactly women.
No,
you
have coincidence.
You have a lot of interesting women, and they don't always agree with each other.
Yes,
look at that.
Now we have to take a break here, so everybody just mellow out for a little bit. There's more to come on the round table, and we'll have more of the panel. Sarah Rogerson, Libby Post, Vera Icarius Kelly, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok. You can join us by emailing panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. Again, we keep the letters brief, to the point. We'll get to as many as we can. No attachments, yada, 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 no abbreviate. You heard the whole thing. We'll take a break. We'll be back. Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, White Christmas here on the Roundtable. We miss you, Sharon, dearly departed. Our email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Great panel today. Alan Shartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, Vera Icarius Kelly, Sarah Rogerson, and Person of the Week for bringing Joe Donahue sandwiches. Libby Post also here today.
You need to also include Lynn.
Lynn was a co-person of the week.
But also bread. Now, bread isn't good for people.
Oh, come on.
What are you talking about? No, bread is
good. It is
bread.
Have sugar.
A sandwich without bread. What are you using, lettuce?
For people.
Bread is carbohydrates. Yeah,
so you're bringing bread to somebody who
we
was ill to begin
bread,
with.
Bread is a perfectly fine.
The guy had massive surgery on both knees, and you're going to begrudge him some bread.
I know.
He
gets
had
to
a ciabatta,
eat.
Actually. So.
Oh, good. He gets to eat whatever he wants.
Yeah, he does. When you're in that situation, you are.
All right, we have more letters here.
Jason says Michigan. Like many states, Michigan is not one state. Eastern is bluish and Western is red. Jason from Ulster Park.
I would break it down even more than that. I mean, I spent most of my childhood growing up in Michigan. My grandfather lived north in a place called Bel Air, Michigan, Torch Lake. There's actually, Michigan is two peninsulas people forget about.
Yeah.
There's the lower peninsula and the upper peninsula. I think the upper peninsula is solidly red. But the Lower Peninsula, I think it's more than blue in the east, where Detroit and Ann Arbor mm-hmm. are, and red in the west. We also have increasingly Grand Rapids in the center of the state, Battle Creek, mm-hmm. Kalamazoo is west. I think it's more of a breakdown around urban centers. And now, interestingly, the people everybody's watching, middle income, mm-hmm. suburban mm-hmm. families.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That Michigan, we're going to see a lot from Michigan. I'm calling it now. No, Michigan's going to be a place to watch for 2020.
Is it going
to
be blue?
Potentially.
Well, that's no answer.
Well, that's
a well, answer. It's a better answer than Texas, where I would say
yeah,
no.
Probably not.
Mm-hmm. You referenced Battle Creek. Now, that's where cornflakes are made?
That's right.
Yeah.
Kellogg's. Really? Kellogg's, yeah.
Cornflakes, okay. Bread is not, but corn.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Rosemary. You are very well correct. You are correct for calling me on that. I love cornflakes, but I don't eat them.
Oh my God!
You know what? Just go to the next letter. This
Life
is ridiculous.
Is too short, Alan.
Battle Creek was also the only place that had a mall near me because I grew up in Coldwater, which is the county seat of Branch County, Michigan.
All right.
Where's Flint?
Northeast of Detroit.
All right. Ellen says, public opinion. Hello, panel. I wonder how many people actually listened to the testimony in the House that convinced those of us who heard it. Most people were working as witnesses testified, and many are too busy to spend hours listening to C-SPAN at night. News clips hardly have the full impact listening live would have. Give it time. I think the public may well catch on as to the process as the process goes forward. Ellen from Greenfield. And in my own self-serving way and the self-serving way of all of us, let me just say that's why we played the hearings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and my mother, who again lives in Michigan, this is a show all about Michigan, but my mother who voted Republican, I hope she doesn't mind me saying this on air, all the way up until Hillary Clinton, actually. She voted for Hillary, she reached out to me while she was watching the hearings and saying, "I'm so disgusted by what I'm hearing, and it feels very sort of out of body to be hearing the Republicans twist logic." Mm-hmm. And we don't have to talk about it now, but I want to talk about it. So I'm going to be talking about politics when I go home, just because people are listening.
Proselytize, go get those. Get those
didn't
votes.
Bernie, I didn't see the actual news item, but didn't he do a handout in the last week or so about how to sway your family members at holiday get-togethers? Talking points.
I
saw the headline on the AP wire, but I didn't actually pull the story.
I think that was very context specific. You really got to know your family's buttons and how to push them.
Yeah, there you go.
Especially Uncle Irving. Matt says, Senate trial and McConnell. As we know, when a president is impeached at Senate trial is procedurally what follows. Isn't As we know, when a president is impeached, a Senate trial is procedurally what follows. Isn't the definition of a trial, quote, an examination of evidence through testimony and salient documents? If McConnell tries to have a proceeding without evidence or testimony, that would not be a trial. And, therefore, would not meet the requirements that are guaranteed by law? Question mark. That's from Matt in Stockbridge.
No, his argument is that it was up to the House to get the evidence, and he will consider what they presented, which, of course, he finds lacking. That's not a ridiculous argument.
Well, this also isn't a judicial trial. There's no judge.
No.
And so,
well, there's
and
a judge, but it's not. I mean,
he sits in the White House.
No. There's John Roberts. At the trial.
Keep well, sure, but it's not a traditional trial that we would think
you're
of
quite
in,
right. you're
in
quite
American
right, as always.
Politics.
Senate trial, there is only one path. Hi, panel. Thanks for pointing out the Attorney General, Bill Barr, deflected the impact of the Mueller report. The White House has, parenthesis, so far, refused in capital letters, all capital letters, participation to witnesses and documents. The only way the House will see a fair trial is to exact an unbreakable agreement for witnesses and documents. And that's from Mary in Hinsdale, Massachusetts.
And, you know, if we want an unbreakable agreement, then we have to engage in long-term negotiation because, you know, number one, if it's unbreakable, then it has to be announced by both Schumer or Pelosi and McConnell, and it has to be done publicly, and there can be some loopholes where, you know, McConnell suddenly changes the agreement. And so that is the difficulty. How do you actually get on that path? It'll require intensive work once the Senate returns in early January, and I don't think we'll see that playing out for several weeks.
It's this simple. The president is on the phone with McConnell saying, No. Just no. You're not doing it.
He's actually in an uncomfortable position, I would assume, now.
McConnell.
Yeah, because, he now hears from Trump regularly. Why don't you just move on and do it? And Pelosi's like, well, what are you going to do? Lay it all out. Let's make an agreement and let's make it public, right? And so this is very unpleasant for McConnell, I would think.
Rosalind says, a thought. The folks who support Donald Trump admire his ability to not pay taxes, skim the system, and not get caught. He is their role model. Unfortunately, Rosalind in Pittsfield.
I just want to go back to the other letter about McConnell for a minute. It's like, it's interesting because for a very long time, one would have thought that McConnell was really the one in charge of everything. And if this is true, that Trump's on the phone with him saying no, you know, that the relationship has flipped a little bit. The power dynamic has flipped.
It's both. He's on the phone with the president. Mm-hmm. He has his members to protect. The members know that if they, as individuals, sway, he's going to kill them. Mm-hmm. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only thing that McConnell really cares about is the appointment of federal judges.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think the only thing he really cares about, in addition to that, is not only the federal judges, which is, of course, as you're right, very, very important, but maintaining the majority.
Oh yeah,
he wants
that is true. But you can do that through appointment of all the federal judges, because that shores up a lot of support from the conservatives and the evangelical bloc. I mean, you see that as one of the major mechanisms through which McConnell, herds the cats.
Okay, so we heard from George. Check me on this, please. Hi guys, gender neutral. I think the problem with the idea of public opinion changing is that each half of the public opinion is waiting for the other half to change to agree with them. We're stuck there for as far as the eye can see. Do you all see a way out, George? I think, for where I'm sitting, if there is a smoking gun of some kind that comes out, it will change public opinion. Look, the tapes changed public opinion.
In the Nixon.
The Nixon thing, sure.
No, I do not think so. I think the things we've seen, including this weekend, letters that, email that proved the White House held up that aid to Ukraine 90 minutes after the phone call that we've all been fixated. That is the smoking gun. I think there have been a series of revelations that might have qualified as a smoking gun, and they all are simply ignored or distorted by Republicans in a way we never saw in Watergate.
Now, you and Vera are intellectuals. There's no question about it.
I mean, okay, this sounds like a setup.
Prepare to be slammed.
They're ready.
Exactly.
But see, you take a look at these things that come across the wires, like this information you've just quoted quite successfully. The real question is, how much do people really care about it? Or do they understand it? And I don't think they do.
I agree with it. And the thing with the tapes back in the 70s was that it was shocking. We are unshockable right now. We've had 3 years of desensitivity.
And we can't.
The man thinks that windmills killed bald eagles. Well, it doesn't get worse than this. He took a Sharpie to say that a hurricane was moving into Alabama. We are beyond shockable.
We can't underestimate.
So he's not a good weatherman then.
No.
Or
scientist for that matter.
No. Or human being.
But we can't underestimate the fatigue and oh my God, there he goes again. Yeah. Like to quote Ronald Reagan, there he goes again. And everybody just sloughs it off like, ugh, this is what we have to live with now. And we cannot say that. We cannot go there.
And the only thing that's going to shift this country is a change in the economy, in the personal income level, in the pocketbook.
I agree
that
with you.
Is the only area where we're going to see any change.
But the thing is that a lot of the people who voted for him are not being benefited by this economy. And so, and okay, so now they're going to cut food stamps for people And the majority of people who get food stamps in this country are poor white people, and they voted for him.
Did they vote or did they not vote last time?
Some of the, a lot of them voted, some of them didn't. I mean, the biggest part of our electorate didn't vote at all.
Right.
But those people are going to be hurt. And so if they didn't vote, they will vote because they're getting
Or will they just sit out and say, oh, now all
I can't say that everybody's going to
messing us up.
I can't say that everyone's going to vote, but there's there's a lot of organizing on in the grassroots going on to get people out to vote.
Well, I hope people participate. That's what I hope.
I'm so sorry to interrupt, but Ray just gave me instructions to finish off these letters.
Sorry.
Did John, impeachment.
I don't think I did. Oh, no, go ahead. No.
What was all of that?
You asked. I was waving to Ralph Gardner, who was in the other studio.
Oh, you
and then you asked me how many minutes are left,
signals.
And I said
we
three.
Don't know.
Three fingers. I interpret that to be something else.
What's this signal mean?
Beep.
John says, impeachment and conviction. First things first, happy holidays to the people, the panel, that bring so much intellectual stimulation to my life, says John. Second, McConnell keeps reminding us this is a political process. Okay, fine. Then we can dispense with the rules of evidence and just use common sense. If Trump isn't guilty, why won't he open his books and administration to scrutiny? He acts guilty, so he must be guilty. That's the message the Democrats have to keep driving home with examples after example. That will change public opinion. John from Sarasota, Florida.
Whoa.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I hope that works. Yep.
And Chris says, question. I'm in my car and listening and have one question. Can Trump continue to run for election for the presidency if, by some fluke, he is not acquitted by the Senate? No, he cannot.
What?
In other words, he can't run for president another time if he is
No, I think
found guilty.
Found guilty.
Found guilty.
Convicted.
Oh, I thought he was.
No, it would take a separate act by the Senate to keep him. Impeachment is for the term you're in. There's nothing that says you can't run
but
again.
But if the Senate finds him guilty at the so-called trial, he cannot run again.
Only if they pass a bill saying that.
Oh, I thought this question was if the House doesn't transmit the articles before the election, can he run?
Oh, I see.
But maybe I'm misinterpreting that.
Wouldn't be the first time.
No, it wouldn't be the last time.
So now let me go. Christine says, economics made easy. Here's where the U.S. economy is right now. The roller coaster has been coasting upwards at a slower rate. The rails are flattening out and progress is slower. In a year or so, we will reach the top and plummet toward the bottom again. The current economy is based on government and consumer debt.
All right, one more here. We have 30 seconds.
And that is worrisome. Hank, that's correct.
Hank says, stock market. I have two brokerage accounts where all my retirement savings are, and I'm not making out that well in the market. I got that. Mm-hmm. The market is essentially flat, and very few stocks are actually making gains. And that's Hank from Tilson.
All right, Hank, thank you. That'll be the last one today. I want to thank Sarah Rogerson for being here, Libby Post, Vera Acarius-Kelly, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. And thank everybody for listening. Now, we will take a break for a couple of days. And then we
Happy holidays, everybody.
Yes. Agreed.
Yes.
We'll miss you.
Enjoy your family time. Don't talk politics.
That's it. We'll be back.